It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN Chicago. Hillary Clinton is standing by on the Super Celebrity Hotline reminding you, I got Blackhawks tickets coming your way in 10 minutes. Stay right here. All right. She was the First Lady. She was the Senator from New York. And she was the Secretary of State. And now she wants to be President of the United States. Here she is, Hillary Clinton.
Hi, Ro.
Madam Secretary, you're in Chicago today. What are you doing while you're here?
Well, I'm doing a bunch of different things. I'm going to visit in the Latino community and talk about the importance of voting. And for those who are eligible to be citizens, the importance of actually signing up and becoming full participants in America. I'm going to a rally of a lot of my supporters on the South Side. I'm going to go visit the wall, which is a terrible memorial to children who have been killed by gun violence in Chicago. I'm going to also be visiting with some workers who are losing their jobs because of the unfortunate decision by Nabisco to move jobs out of Chicago, out of the country. So I'll be all over the city. I'm looking forward to it. I really, you know, love being back in, you know, the city where I was born and where I spent a lot of time growing up and talking to folks about what's at stake in this election.
Let's talk a little bit about that Nabisco thing, because I know that's become a campaign issue. Obviously, Donald Trump's been talking about it a lot. What would you like to see done in a situation like that? I know that one of the positions that are in your commercials are penalizing companies that outsource either money or jobs. How would you actually do that?
You know, a lot of companies take money from taxpayers. They take it in the form of you know, inducements and tax breaks to, you know, come to a community or to expand. And in this case, several years ago, the company that, you know, built the production lines that are being shut down, you know, did it with a lot of taxpayer dollars. And my view is, if you ever took a penny, and if a company you bought a penny, then you got to pay it back before you leave. And I'm calling it an exit tax, because I want companies to understand, when, you know, local people invest in you because they want to attract jobs and create economic opportunities, you incur an obligation, and that obligation has to be repaid. So I'm going to make it tougher for companies to, you know, pick up and leave. And if they are trying to evaluate the cost benefit, you know, let's make it on the cost side that, yeah, maybe you can get cheaper labor somewhere else, but we're going to impose this exit tax, so you need to think twice before you throw people in this community out of work.
You're the former Secretary of State, so obviously you know a lot of world leaders, economic leaders. Are they concerned that the United States is on the precipice of a trade war, given the kind of rhetoric that's going around this campaign season?
You know, Ro, it's an interesting question. It's an important question, but here's how I see it. Every country in the world that is an advanced economy, from Canada to Europe to Asia, particularly Asia, do all kinds of things to protect their workers, to protect their markets. They may talk a good game about how they're into free trade, but you get below the surface, and what you see is a lot of subsidies going to businesses, a lot of indirect subsidies subsidizing energy, for example. They also use regulations. You know, one of the problems we have getting American cars into Asian markets is, you know, they're always coming up with a new regulation. You know, the window's too big, the antenna on the front is too high. And I have watched this, and, you know, for many years, it was still a win-win for our country because, you know, we're only 5% of the population. We have to trade with the other 95%. So if there were impediments, you know, we could overcome them, and it was still a net plus for us. But we're getting to the point where we've got to be more careful about how we open our market to everybody else. I'll give you a current example. You know, China's economy is slowing down. They are a totally subsidized economy, state-owned enterprises, huge transfers of support from their government to these businesses. It's not a free market in the sense we know it. So they are slowing down. They don't have as big a market for steel, and they've got a lot of steel plants. So they are producing it at a very low, below the market cost. They are dumping it into the American market. That is causing layoffs and shutdowns and job losses in the American steel industry. So at some point, we've got to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, you can't use us and not expect to have reciprocity where we are going to stop being taken advantage of. We have the richest, biggest, most open market in the world, and at some point, we're not going to play that game.
How does the Chinese government specifically, or the Japanese government, I know that Donald Trump has been kind of focusing on those two economies and saying something almost similar to what you're saying, which is, you know, we're gonna come to you and say you can't play these games anymore, can't revalue your currencies. What is the difference between you and Donald Trump when it comes to that?
Well, first of all, I negotiated on behalf of American companies, both when I was a senator from New York and, you know, when I was Secretary of State. And I don't think bluster and bullying is a particularly effective strategy. I'll give you a quick example. There's a great old American company in New York, in what we call upstate New York, in Corning, New York, the Corning Company. They, you know, pioneered fiber optics. The Gorilla Glass in your iPhone is probably a result of Corning research. They've been selling into the Chinese market fiber optic lines. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Chinese come to them and say, you know, we think that you are being unfair in your pricing. So we're going to slap a tariff on you, and we're going to require that you start doing a joint partnership with a Chinese company. So Corning comes to me as their senator. This is an absolutely unacceptable proposal. Number one, you don't want to give your intellectual property or share it with some Chinese company that is only trying to steal it and then push you out of the market completely. So basically, it was a very tough negotiating tactic. And, you know, I got involved. I got the Bush administration, after some hesitancy, involved. And, you know, we were able to resolve that. But if you have a strong position going in so that the Chinese government understands that if they try to do that to an American company, there is going to be some sort of reciprocal action, they will think twice and three times. So I have negotiated. I've gotten good results from American companies. I have, you know, been the champion of exports, which we increased during my time as Secretary of State. And so I have a pretty clear idea of what works, how to negotiate to get the results that will keep and grow American jobs.
Secretary Clinton, let's turn to terrorism here for a moment. Just a few hours ago, a Palestinian-American turned himself in on the battlefield in Syria. He's a member of ISIS. How do we stop ISIS from recruiting here in the U.S.? And do we need to put thousands of troops on the ground there to stop them where they live?
The answer to the second question is no, and here's why, which answers the first question. I have laid out the most comprehensive plan about how we can defeat ISIS. It consists of, you know, intensifying what we are doing from the air, where we have an American-led coalition that is bombing sites in Syria and Iraq to destroy the infrastructure they have, to target and take out their leaders, and to support Arab and Kurdish fighters on the ground who are actually physically taking back territory. We also have to continue working to build up the Iraqi army. It was in good shape when we left after the Iraqi government under Maliki wouldn't agree to the terms of our staying, but it deteriorated. It became, you know, ineffective and frankly cowardly. It is now, you know, doing much better, able to take back one of the cities ISIS had taken, Ramadi. But we've got work to do. And I'll tell you what our biggest gaps are, and you alluded to it. We need to cut off the flow of foreign fighters, the flow of foreign money, and we've got to take them on in cyberspace. You know, this group is pretty sophisticated. They are recruiting, they are propagandizing, they are glorifying violence, even inciting attacks. And that's why we've got to work with the tech companies. You know, this is the most sophisticated terrorist group that we've seen because they have so many European and other recruits who are quite computer savvy. And then the final thing I would say, obviously, we have to keep America safe, something that I am, you know, passionately devoted to. And, you know, some measure based on my experience as a senator from New York on 9/11. And I know we've got to have better cooperation from federal, state, and local law enforcement. We've got to get better intelligence. But the other thing we have to do is something we did after 9/11 in New York. We basically said, if you hear something suspicious, if you see it, report it. And people did. And we were able to stymie and prevent attacks. And so when Donald Trump attacks, condemns American Muslims, he is not only wrong, he's dangerous. We've got to have everybody against the terrorists. We have to have them as the front line who will hear and see more than probably you and I will, and report it and get it to law enforcement. So, you know, I think I have a much better, more realistic idea of what we need to do to stop and defeat ISIS and to protect us from a terrorist attack.
Well, I guess that gets us to what everybody's been thinking about, which is this is a crazy election year. It's turning violent. How, if it's you versus Donald Trump, Secretary Clinton, do you handle this rhetoric?
You know, look, I deplore what I see happening, inciting violence, applauding violence, congratulating your supporters who have engaged in violence, offering to pay legal fees for people who beat up people. It's just outrageous. And, you know, we don't need to divide our country. We need to be uniting us around some of our common challenges, like getting the economy going and getting more good jobs with rising incomes and dealing with, you know, foreign challenges like ISIS. So I have always fought common ground, you know, as First Lady, as a senator, as Secretary of State. I worked with Republicans, and I'll go anywhere, meet with anyone to find that common ground. And when I'm not running for something, you know, the Republicans talk about what a good colleague I can be and how I can, you know, work with them to get things done. And that's what I will do as president. I understand how hard this is when we have a partisanship that interferes with statesmanship and cooperation. But I think I'm uniquely suited to take on Donald Trump if he ends up being the nominee. I've been, you know, in the, you know, arena for a long time. I understand what it takes to campaign and win, particularly against, you know, candidates who are, you know, really inciting divisiveness. And so I'm going to be, you know, ready and prepared to do that if I'm so fortunate enough to be the nominee. And I hope all of your listeners come out and vote on Tuesday. And, of course, I'd be honored to earn their vote.
Secretary, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Great to talk to you. Thank you so much, Rob. Bye-bye.
All right, there she goes, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with her versus Trump, if it is, in fact, the case. All right.